All right, welcome everybody. This session is Java on Microsoft Azure. My name is Chris Reisner, and this is Brian Benz. We're both technical evangelists. I work at Microsoft, and Brian works at MS OpenTech, which we'll talk a little bit more about later. Thank you all for waking up at the early, early hour to come see this.
Thank you.
Blown away that at Tech Ed, we don't have a room full of people wanting to hear about Java on Azure, so thanks for showing up. So just kind of go over what we'll talk about today. The first thing we'll talk about is why we're building Java support on Azure. We'll then talk about hosting options for putting Java on Azure. And as kind of a sneak peek, we'll actually be talking about those, which are virtual machines, cloud services, and some of the tooling there, websites, and then in the end, we'll have probably more than enough time for questions. So first of all, you know, why have we been spending the time to build out and have the support for Java on Azure? Java is heavily used inside and outside the enterprise. If you look at like GitHub, they put out a yearly or monthly, whatever. You know, these are the top languages in GitHub repositories. Java is pretty much regularly in the top three, so it really is very heavily used, and it's cross-platform capable. So as you're going to see today, you know, it runs on Windows, it runs on Linux, which is actually Satya had like an interview a few months ago or a month ago where he said 20% of Azure hosting was actually Linux, which is kind of crazy. You know, it runs on phones, and then when you talk about running it as a server, you know, there are tons of different server options. So it's really quite a, you know, a diverse thing you can use. So when it comes to Microsoft Azure, you've got three ways you can run Java right now. Virtual machines, so we've got a partnership with Oracle, which we'll talk more about, which lets you run Oracle WebLogic Server, database, as well as Linux. And then you can also run Windows Server and Linux, and you can run Java on those. Then cloud services, which is a platform as a service thing, which we'll talk more about in a minute, and then websites as well. So if you look at, you know, computing as a whole, what we've got right here is kind of the old diagram of, hey, I've got my own data center, I've got my own servers, I go buy the hardware, I go buy the operating system, I install the operating system, I get everything set up and ready to go. Then my developers, they build the applications, they put it on there, I've got somebody who manages it. It's all basically handled by you. Well, the idea of cloud computing is, hey, let's get a lot of that off your plate. And so there are kind of three different things we're going to look at. The first is infrastructure as a service, which is basically, you know, virtual machines. So instead of you having to buy the hardware and figure out how to virtualize all of that, we do that for you. You basically get an operating system that's running on a computer, and you go from there. And that requires you to do, like, the patching and updating the OS and all those sort of things, as well as just administering the actual box. The next level up is platform as a service. And that basically takes the operating system out of the way for you. The interesting thing about platform as a service when it comes to cloud services is that you still deal with that middleware, that server layer. And for websites, you sort of still deal with it. And we'll explain as we get to those. And the last thing is software as a service. And these are basically services that you can take advantage of, whether you're hosting stuff in VMs or on websites or in your own data center. They're features of Azure that you can just use from your applications. So the first thing we'll talk about in more detail is IaaS, or Infrastructure as a Service. So this is Windows and Linux VMs, Oracle, Linux, everything running Java. So a little while back, we announced a partnership with Oracle where basically you can run Oracle VMs inside of Microsoft Azure, and they're fully supported, you know, official and licensed. And more so, you know, there's a gallery that you can use where you can really spin up these VMs really quite quickly. Now, these became generally available in March, so it's really approved for production use as of then. So as I mentioned, there's a gallery where it makes it really quite easy to spin up, whether it's a Oracle Linux, an Oracle WebLogic, or an Oracle database server. And we're going to see a demo of this in just a minute. As far as the different Java and Oracle VM images, there's kind of quite a few across the board. There's different versions, whether it's standard and enterprise, there's database and WebLogic, there's a bundle of those together. There's just an image that has just the JDK on it. And there's also Windows Server running WebLogic and database and all those things. And then there's actually quite a few different flavors of Linux that are supported in Azure right now. So you've got stuff like Ubuntu, SUSE, Oracle, which we mentioned. I think there's a couple more.
SUSE, Ubuntu's got something in there. We've got Oracle Linux. Actually, SUSE has two, Enterprise Linux and the Community Edition as well.
Quite a few different flavors of Linux if you want to host your Java in that manner. Now, one of the really great things about the Oracle partnership is if you already have licenses, you can actually bring those to Azure. So if you have a license, you build a VM that uses Oracle Linux, or Oracle Java rather, and you just your VM just goes along with it. Now another thing you can do is you can actually, so you can create a Windows Server, Oracle Linux, a VM. If you create a Oracle Linux server, you bring your own license. If you create a Windows server and you run, you're running Linux or Oracle Java on it, it actually comes with the VM included. So whatever price you pay for the Windows Server VM, that includes the license. You don't have to worry about any separate licensing deals around that. So let's actually go see a demo of this stuff in action. So this is the Microsoft Azure portal. Now I've already got a few VMs created, which we're going to look at in a minute, but the first thing we'll do is actually go through the gallery experience of creating a new VM. So in here, I've just got to create. I'm already in the virtual machine area, and I'll go to From Gallery. And there's a ton of different things in here, you know, lots of different Microsoft Server, or SQL Server, Windows Server, all those sort of things. I'm going to go over here and go to the Oracle area. And here I can choose from any of these different Oracle servers, whether it's Windows Server running WebLogic, or down here we can go to Oracle Linux running WebLogic, or just the JDK on Windows Server, you know, basically anything we want to do. Today we'll just say we're going to run a Oracle WebLogic server. So the first step is just to give it a name, so we'll just call this My Oracle VM. And then we can choose whatever tier we want to put it in. I'm just going to say standard. Then you get the choice of, you know, what size memory, how many cores, all those sort of things you're used to if you're used to spinning up virtual machines. And the last part is just to create a username and password, so we'll just say, I don't think it's going to let me choose, just admin.
And that's a WebLogic username and password.
So the next part is to create a cloud service. And this cloud service kind of acts as the entry point to your VM. So I'm just going to go ahead and create a new one. We'll just say My Oracle VM. Yeah, this all looks good. It will create a storage account, which kind of acts as basically a drive to store your VM. So that's how it handles statefulness, or at least storing the actual VM image. And then if you want to, you can create an availability set. This is a way of making sure you're extremely reliable. So when you create an availability set, it basically means you're going to have at least two versions of, or two, you know, instances of the VM. So if one goes down, one is always up. I'll just leave it as such. And then the end is you can actually start out with some endpoints already out there. So as long as I have this remote desktop here, then later on I could actually RDP into my box if I wanted to. If I got rid of that, then I'd have a little bit more trouble there. I'll just put a 2 there. And the last step is to, you can install the VM agent, which is going to be done by default, which is what allows me to kind of do some stuff like password resets and things like that. And there's a bunch of other stuff we can do, like you can use Puppet and Chef for doing deployment configurations. We can set up Microsoft anti-malware, Symantec, and Trend for security. A lot of really cool kind of built-in features if we want to do that. So now that I've done that, it's going to go ahead and create a VM. You know, it's going to spin everything up behind the scenes and revision stuff. It's going to take a few minutes, so we're not actually going to wait for that. What I've got instead is I've got a bunch of different VM images here. They're going to be running a WebLogic. It's going to be kind of scaled across these servers. And it's going to run a store, you know, an Oracle sample app called the Dizzy Store. Now, I've already got that ready to go, so I'm just going to go ahead and open some of this up. Apparently, I can't copy and paste URLs, though, so. So first time I go to this, it's going to say, hey, we're deploying the actual admin center. So it's doing that. And here I am, I'm at WebLogic, I'm at the server administration page. So I'll just go ahead and log in here. And what's really great about this and what I really want to highlight is this isn't some weird Microsoft version of WebLogic. You know, we didn't go in there and say, hey, let's do all these modifications. This is WebLogic server. So if you're used to using WebLogic in your data center, this is essentially no different. So we've got the basically everything here, the administration stuff. The first thing we'll do is we'll go into the environment, we'll go to the servers. And what we see here is we've got a bunch of different servers, and if we look over the machine names, we'll see that those actually line up with what we saw earlier in the portal. So these different machines that are running, or these different VMs that are running, they're tied right into here into my WebLogic admin portal. So next thing we'll do is we'll go over to clusters, I'll go to my servers, and I'm just going to go ahead and start my servers. So I'll click those and go to start. Now this is going to take a few seconds to actually get going. So we'll let's refresh. And while it's doing that, we'll go down to deployments and check that out. So, and we got here, we've got the shopping cart, which is that Dizzy Store app I mentioned. Now, since I just started the servers, it's not actually going to be up yet, but as soon as the servers are ready to go, which we can go back here and hopefully they'll be ready. Okay, so now they're running, or at least two out of three of them are, so hopefully we can go here and we can run our app. First time startup might take a few seconds. All right, so now we've got our app. You know, it says, hey, this actually came through WLS node 2, so it knows which of the actual VMs my request ended up going through. But what's really, you know, the takeaway from this is that we're running absolutely normal web logic, running inside of Microsoft Azure, and we're running a, you know, a standardly deployed Java application running on top of this. So anything you're currently running on Java on, you know, on Oracle Java, you could be running in here with really little work and really little setup. So just kind of refresh. You've got two different versions of doing licensing. You can either bring your own license, or if you have, if you're doing like a Windows server with Oracle Java, the price of the license is included. So you've got license mobility. It really is fully supported. So when it comes, you know, if there's issues or anything like that, this is really fully supported by Oracle. So they are completely behind you using your deployments on top of Microsoft Azure. And it's the only cloud environment that has Hyper-V support for Oracle, which is really great.
Real quick, sorry, I just wanted to add, if anyone's interested in more details on Oracle, at the end of, we'll talk about the session, but Thursday morning I have a session with some guys from Oracle, and we're going to be talking in more detail about all the Oracle options.
Yep, and I think they also have a booth downstairs if you want to actually corner them and have specific questions around that.
Yeah, Oracle has a booth here.
The last thing before we move past or out of the VM world, is VM Depot, and this is something that's was created by Microsoft OpenTech, and it's basically a compilation or a library of VM images. So there's a ton of different things in here. So for example, if you wanted a, let's see, I think there's, here we've got stuff about with Redmine and Radiant, but if you go in here, there's also stuff like Tomcat. Basically, if you want a VM image, there may be a VM image that somebody's already created and put in this library. So instead of having to do all the configuration setup, you can just go grab this VM and deploy it to Microsoft Azure.
Do you want me to show that quick?
Sure, yeah. We'll actually jump over there really quick.
So this is actually VM Depot. It's vmdepot.msopentech.com. If you just search on VM Depot out on the web, you'll find it. And if I type in Java here, so there's over 1,000 images in this marketplace. So VM Depot itself, it's all Linux images. There's no Windows images out there. It's prepackaged images that people can deploy. And the way you deploy it is just select one of these. Let's just pick. Anybody here using Jenkins? A show of hands. Okay, a couple people, good. All right, let's go with Jenkins. So what they've done, Bitnami is one of our partners. They created a Java Jenkins and Tomcat prepackaged Hyper-V image here. To deploy this, you just make the layers happy by selecting that. And you can put this out on a Linux VM just by selecting any data center you want. We can put it in North Europe. And what this does is it creates a script for you to use with our CLR that allows you to deploy this out to a Linux virtual machine. Using that script, you just put in your own subscription name and password and a few other things. A DNS prefix will be the name of your VM, you know, .cloudapp.net site on Azure. And you can publish that out. There's also a way that you can do that through the portal as well without using these scripts. But it's just a handy way to grab things. You can also, if anyone's interested, publish your own Hyper-V images. If you have an image that you've put together that you want to share with the public, you can actually publish that out here on VM Depot. If you're a service provider or a partner and you have something like that, you can. There's instructions on vmdepot.com to actually package up this as a Hyper-V and distribute it. Was there a question at the back? What flavor of Java, I think, is the question? In this case, I would guess that this is just the Oracle JDK that's using for this one. But we'll talk about the Azul JDK, which is an option we have as well in a minute. All right, thanks.
Great. So next, I'm going to hand it over to Brian, who's going to talk more about platform as a service.
Thanks. So one of the things I wanted to point out is we have infrastructure as a service. We now have breaking news, JDK V8 on there. So if you're not happy with the way that everything's nice and stable with V7, you could go ahead and use V8 and crash all your apps. It's the latest, greatest version of Java. I'm just joking, of course, but it's out there if you need to use it for whatever. JDK 8 is out there. So we have, as Chris mentioned earlier, three ways to work on things on Azure. We have infrastructure as a service, which is just a basic virtual machine. We also have PaaS, which is platform as a service. It's sort of in between a website where all you can control is the source code and infrastructure as a service where you control everything. It's a managed environment, and you can run Linux, I'm sorry, you can run Windows, and it manages the operating system for you. In this case, for PaaS, for Java specifically, you handle the app server and everything down the stack from there. Your source code, the app server, the JDK, things like that you can manage. The operating system is managed for you. So we built a plugin. I work for Microsoft Open Technologies, and we're actually a wholly owned subsidiary of Microsoft that's specifically tasked with delivering open source on Windows Azure. I keep saying Windows Azure. Azure and devices. So one of the things we've done is we built an Eclipse plugin that lets you test things locally. It emulates compute and storage and deploy things out to Windows Azure PaaS. One of the unique things about PaaS is who knows the difference between web roles and worker roles here? Okay, just a few of you. For those of you who don't know what it is, so we have this concept in PaaS, which is web roles and worker roles. So web roles are basically a web server. You access things. There's IIS on the front end. Worker roles are the same thing minus the web server. There's a few details, but that's generally what they are. In this case, we're using worker roles because we use Tomcat or Jetty or JBoss or Glassfish as our app server, our actually web server that we're going to use to access the outside world. And the worker roles can host Java. And you access the most easy way to access that in PaaS is through our Eclipse tooling, which I'll show you in a minute. And we also have let me go back there. We also have the Azul OpenJDK, which is something that we've worked with Azul Systems on. How many people use an OpenJDK versus the Oracle JDK? Show of hands. Nobody. Okay. Well, something you might want to know about. It's a little bit more permissive license. You can bundle the OpenJDK with your applications if you're distributing them out to inside your organization and outside. Azul Systems are the people who built the OpenJDK. We've partnered with them to build a specific version of OpenJDK called Zulu. So it's Azul Zulu OpenJDK. And it's optimized for Windows and for Azure. I almost said Windows Azure again. So Eclipse tooling, what can you do with this? You can test your applications with the Azure emulator, as I mentioned, compute and storage. It has support for SSL, so if you're building SSL into your applications, we have a facility in the Java SDK that we've supplied. Which is called ACS filtering, which allows you to use Active Directory, for example, to authenticate and use SSL in conjunction with that. We have sticky sessions, which is something that allows you to, if you have multiple nodes, multiple worker roles in PaaS, and you want to have session persistence for a user, so you have four worker roles, 1, 2, 3, 4, and a user logs into session to node or worker role 2, they're always going to go back to node 2 just to maintain session persistence while they're on that machine. They won't be distributed across the other. Once they picked a server, they won't be distributed to any other server. You can configure roles as well. So as I mentioned, the worker roles, you can set up how many you want. You can set up the size of those worker roles, endpoints, and names. I'm going to show you all this in a minute. But we also have a facility for building self-signed certificates for testing. And once you're tested, you're confident, everything's okay, you can publish it out to Windows Azure. So without any further ado, let me show you the Eclipse plugin. Oops. Thank you, sir. All right. For those of you at the back, this is just a little JSP here. It's just a standard Eclipse. How many people are using Eclipse? Okay, good. All right, so this will be relevant to you. This is, we're in Eclipse now. This is a web deployment project, pretty standard stuff. And what I've done is I've actually installed the Eclipse plugin that we have. When you install the Eclipse plugin, it also installs the Azure SDK for Java. And I'll talk a little bit about the features there and some breaking news about some new features there in a minute as well. But this is just a basic JSP as part of the web deployment package. When you install the Eclipse plugin, you've got a couple different options here that are added up at the top. One of them is new Azure deployment project. So what I've got, I just want to create a new package. And what this does is it actually packages up your Java code along with some instructions for Azure when you deploy this out to Azure that tells it what to do with this instance, where to deploy it, what size of instance you want to create and or maintain, things like that. So I'll just do create a new deployment project called TechEd North America. Now here's some of the options you've got, as some of those options I showed you on the slide there. You have JDK, server, and application options. In the JDK, what I'm going to do is I'm going to build this package, test it locally, and then we can deploy it out. Use the JDK from this file path, and it picks this up from your environment variables. It picks it up Java Home. And in this case, I'm still using Java 7. I can also select a different JDK if I want to. If I'm testing Java 8, for example, I can select that JDK. Now, here's where the options are kind of interesting. You've got some options here. Deploy my local JDK. So when this gets published out to Azure, I'm going to grab my local JDK, publish it out to Azure with the package. That's pretty standard stuff. Some of the nice things you can do as well is you could use one of our AzuZulu packages that we've worked with Azul to build. The other thing you can do, if you want to make your package a little smaller, easier to deploy, or just more flexible, you can choose to have a JDK from a remote location. So in this case, you could put a URL in there, any accessible URL. It could be the Java site to download it. You can also choose a storage account. So this is Azure Storage, this is blob storage where you can put files like a file system. If you have a storage account, you can actually point to that storage account to put your JDK in there as well. And like I said, this makes the package smaller and easier to distribute. It's a little easier on bandwidth from your local machine or from wherever you're deploying this from, and saves on bandwidth and size. So that's some options you've got there for JDK. The server is very similar. So use this server from this file path. If I go here, I just pick a Tomcat server, which I already have installed. Okay. So you notice Apache Tomcat pops up here. I don't know if you can see that very closely, but Apache Tomcat popped up. You also have several other options for Tomcat servers that you can use. We've got Tomcat 6, 7, 8, Glassfish, JBoss, and Jetty. And you can actually add your own custom JDK, Tomcat app server if you wanted to, or any other kind of app server, actually, behind the scenes. And there's a way to do that through the customize options here. Same as the JDK, to make your package smaller, more sleek, you can choose to deploy it from a URL. You can also deploy it from a storage account. And you can specify the home directory that's going to go into when it's deployed as well. So in this case, I'm just going to use the local server again. So I hit next. So this is going to package up what I've built here, which is just a WAR file. If you had any other dependencies for this application, you can bundle them here as well. And I'll show you some more flexible details, or more flexible options in a minute as well. Then we've got session affinity, sticky sessions. This is the session persistence that I mentioned earlier. This allows you to, as I mentioned, with the 1, 2, 3, 4 nodes, always if a user logs into server 2, the worker role 2, it's always going to go back to worker role 2 for that user to maintain session persistence. We also have caching, built-in memcached compatible caching that can be distributed across the roles that you're using. And we have remote debugging that's enabled through Eclipse. So this will be deployed out to our PaaS solution on Azure, but you can actually remote debug this as well using Eclipse and the facilities that are in Eclipse for remote debugging. So from that, I'm not going to pick any of those options. I'll just save this. And it creates a new deployment package over here. Now I can test this out. I can run it. Some of the things I want to show you as well, if I go into properties here. So several resources we've got. If you click on Azure, as I mentioned, you can. There's two different ways to use this. You can test in the emulator locally. You can deploy to cloud, and there's different options for that. These are the OS options you have as well. Windows Server 2008 and 2012 are your options for deploying to PaaS, because we're deploying to the PaaS solution, which is a managed. Remote access allows you to use remote desktop connections to connect into this. And then we've got roles. And I want to show you here the details. So as I mentioned, we've got web roles and worker roles. In this case, it's a worker role. This, you can specify the size you want here. So in this particular case, we're just going for a standard. We can go for an extra small. And when this is actually deployed out to Windows Azure, it's going to use that setting for whatever you want. And if you notice, when we were back at the previous window, you can create multiple roles here. So it'll deploy this out to multiple roles. You can have different sizes for each role. You can have different memory options, things like that. You can also have caching options for each one. As I mentioned, we've got that memcached compatible. You can manage certificates here. If you have any X509 certificates for SSL, you manage those here. These are the components. So behind the scenes, if you have any custom environment variables that go with your app or any other deployment packages or dependencies that you want to add, those are added here. And we've got the remote debugging support. You can set up custom endpoints as well, as many as you need for each app server. Environment variables, once again, you can add the environment variables there. For load balancing, this is where you set up your session affinity. Some facilities for local storage when you're working with the emulator. And then this is basically the UI that we had for server and applications. This is where you enable SSL offloading. So you go into each worker role. You can manage the SSL settings for each worker role. So some of the roles in your configuration can be open. So for example, the home page of a JSP website, you want that to be open, and then you might have other pages that you want to be have users authenticated on. This is where you set that up. You do it per role. When you click on this, it automatically sets the port to 443 instead of 80 and configures HTTPS for you. It uses something called SSL offloading. So it actually doesn't change the app server, GlassFish, JBoss, Tomcat, Jetty. It works with the PaaS SSL facilities that we have to communicate with the SSL client. So it uses the X509 certificate to go out and compare and talk to the front end of your PaaS solution. And inside of that PaaS solution, the Tomcat server, JBoss, Jetty, those are not changed at all. So it's just a basic non-SSL Tomcat, but SSL is enabled on top of that. So the security is not inside your app server. It's in the actual PaaS role. Yes? The question was, does it create a proxy on the worker role? Yes. Yeah, that's basically what it's doing. When it's doing the offloading, it's creating a proxy so that you don't, no user will ever see your app server, your Tomcat app server, or any other kind. It's only going to see that SSL URL. So as I mentioned, you can add different worker roles here. So I can add a second one and tell it I want to be large, and it'll go ahead and set those up. So I've got a small and a large worker role here, and I can set up other ones. And each worker role has all those properties I just showed you. So I'm actually going to cancel out of that. So that's basically how you do that. And then when you're ready, you can actually test this in the Azure emulator by just hitting this green button here, the play button. You can shut that down when you're ready to be done, and you can deploy to the cloud using this option here. You just publish to Azure Cloud, and it publishes this out, these multiple worker roles, however you set that up and configure it. It's actually going to publish that out to your Azure subscription for you. So that's the Eclipse plugin in a nutshell. So some of the other things we've got, actually, if we can go back, I'm on 8, is it? Yeah. Thank you, sir. Okay. So some of the other options we've got, if you don't use the Eclipse plugin, you can still download the SDK from here. You go to azure.microsoft.com, and you go to the Java SDK. There's a Windows, Mac, and Linux installation here, and a lot of documentation. The documentation has coverage for all of the different Azure services that you have, which are, we're going to go into those in a bit detail later, but access control, which is the ACS filtering I was telling you about, blob services, media services, et cetera, et cetera. And all those APIs have documentation as well. The documentation for each one of those packages, it's got a little snippet of code that you can use right away for all the services that we have listed there. We also have a lot of good information there. There's a Hello World tutorial there if you've never used Java with Eclipse. There's a tutorial there to get you set up with that, and a lot of different tutorials on just using our Java SDK with our services in general. This is all on GitHub. So the Eclipse plugin that I just showed you and the Azure SDK for Java are out on GitHub. The SDK for Java is out on azure.github.com. And we also have, I just showed you the Eclipse plugin. I'll go back. The msopentech.github.com is where you find the Eclipse plugin itself. So if there's something you actually don't like about the Eclipse plugin, you can go out there and you can fork it. It's all written in Java. It's all open source. And you can use it. Same with the SDK. One other thing I wanted to mention, has anybody here used the WebPI installer when you're working with Windows servers? Okay, well, we've added the, I won't go into the details, but we've added, looks like nobody's using it, but we have this tool called the WebPI installer, which is pretty easy to use. The web platform is something we've developed for Azure. Actually, I'll show it. What the heck? Thanks. We have time. The web platform installer that we've got, if I go into my Windows here. So you can download this. It's just called the Microsoft Web Platform Installer. This is a real quick little demo. Let's decline the update for now. So one of the things you've got here, there's several different applications. If you haven't used this before, it's a pretty handy tool. There's a lot of different applications here. If you want to deploy Joomla out to websites, things like that, all you have to do is hit the Add button here and deploy them. And this deploys them on your local machine, and also deploys them on a Windows server. So we've added Azul Zulu, which I mentioned is the custom OpenJDK created by Azul for us. All you have to do is just click Add. And it's got a number of dependencies that it'll install automatically for you and set up on your local machine. If you want to use that, it's a handy tool instead of having to find Azul, download it, configure it, things like that. On your server, local machine, it's there. So that's my demo. I've already done that, and I'll hand it over to Chris for websites.
Great, thank you. So what we just saw was, cloud services. And when Microsoft Azure, then Windows Azure, really launched, cloud services was, the feature of how you hosted stuff inside Azure. Since then, we've obviously had a ton of stuff. You probably saw a really bunch of cool stuff yesterday in the keynote. One of the things that was added maybe 2 years ago now was something called Azure Websites. And the idea was cloud services are great, and you've got web roles, and you can host websites inside that. But let's try and make it even easier. So what we created was Azure Websites, which is almost like an abstraction like shared hosting that you might get on some provider you might find out there, but obviously built on the power and the scalability of Microsoft Azure. Recently, actually, at Build, we announced that you actually had we support now deploying Java websites onto Azure websites. Prior to that, it was .NET, PHP, and Node, I think. So now you also have the ability to do Java. So there's built-in support for Java 7, Apache Tomcat 7, and Jetty 9. And when I say built-in support, I mean that you can deploy it without having to actually, you can actually deploy Java stuff running on Apache on Tomcat or Jetty without having to install that whole app server yourself. We'll see an example in a second. So you have the ability to upload your own custom Java code as well as an actual JVM if you want to. The interesting thing about this is that by default when you create an Azure website, it supports .NET and PHP and Node. In order to get to support Java, you kind of have to flip a switch where it basically says, hey, everything is now going to this Java backend. So it's not like you can mix like ASP.NET and Java. You go from one or the other, essentially, once you've decided to do that. So let's go ahead and actually see how this works. So I'm back in the Microsoft Azure portal. Now, I've already created a site that we're just going to go ahead and browse to just to see that right now it just says, hey, your website's created. You can publish using Git, FTP, or Visual Studio, et cetera. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go into this Java site, and I'm going to go to this site, which is not set up for Java yet, and I'm going to go to the Configure tab. Now, the new thing that was added here at Build was that you can now do this Java version. And right now, it's marked as off. And like I said, when you create a website, it's set so you know you can do .NET or PHP or Python, I guess, as well as Node. But in order to get it to Java, you basically have to flip a switch, like I said, that basically says, hey, everything is just going to Java. So when I turn this, when I go ahead and pick the Java version, I say, do you want to do Tomcat or Jetty? And we'll just say Jetty for now. We can save that. And when I do this, it really is, you know, it's changing the endpoint. So everything, every request to my website is now going to get funneled to this Java app server. There's nowhere else it can go. So we'll give it just a second. It looks like it's done. And now when we browse this, well, it's saying it's a 404 because I don't actually have any. Oh, there we go. All right, so now it says, hey, this is a Java-based web application. It's there. Here's some information. It's running 1.7. It's from Oracle. It's on x86. And here's the Jetty base. Now, the interesting thing about this, and you'll see that when you look at where the Jetty installation is it's actually running the Jetty server from the program files on the server. So I don't have to deploy Jetty myself. It's not, you know, if I were to FTP in there, I wouldn't see the Jetty server there because it's running Jetty from the program files. I'm not using up any space or anything like that. It's just going to run Jetty. The same thing works if I were to go back here and switch it over to Tomcat. It's running off shared files that are inside of each of these Windows Azure website VMs. Now, the other option is that we can actually deploy the full server if we want to. So to do that, we'll go to New, and I'll choose From Gallery. And inside here, we can see there's Apache Tomcat right there. And if I go down to the J's, we'll see Jetty's there. We'll say Tomcat for now. And what's going to happen when I do this is it's actually going to deploy the full server for me. So we call this my Tomcat server. We'll just leave that as such and go next. And we'll give it a second. And it's actually going to deploy this. Now, the great thing about this is if I FTP in, I'm going to actually see the Apache Tomcat server there, which means that I can get to all the root configuration of the server and modify it as needed. So if you want to have, you know, full control over the Tomcat settings or the Jetty settings, you'd want to go this route so you can then get to your config files and change them. If you're relying on the base implementation that's in program files, you're kind of stuck with whatever the base implementation is. So now that that's running, let's go ahead and browse to it. And first requests always take a second for everything to spin up. Great, so I've got Tomcat. So now, like I said, I can FTP in and I can start doing stuff. One of the really cool things about now that you're doing websites is it's got really great support for, like, let's see if we go in here. We've got really great support for setting up different deployment sources. So if I want to create a, like, for example, let's say I want to put everything in a local Git repo where I want to then deploy my website from that, I can actually set up a Git repository or even use GitHub, and then every time I create my new war and I want to push my changes out to my server, I can do that via here. So it opens up a lot of scenarios where it makes it a lot easier to get your Java code up into Microsoft Azure and hosted. And then one of the other cool things is that, and I don't know, I think this was a relatively recent announcement, is once you're in websites, you actually get wildcard SSL. So you know, even though it has the Azure websites.net, if you need to get to something there, like an administration resource where you need SSL, but maybe the public-facing website doesn't, you can always actually use the wildcard SSL to get real SSL support, whereas you know, the public-facing site maybe wouldn't be, or the public-using site wouldn't necessarily be SSL-driven. So this kind of brings the question of, when do I use cloud services and when do I use websites? As always, with this question, it really depends. You know, the same question kind of also involves is, when do you use cloud services versus VMs? Kind of comes into, what sort of level of configuration do you really need? With cloud services, you've got really great tooling with the Eclipse tooling. Like websites right now, there isn't any tooling today. So when you know, Brian showed you the Eclipse tooling, there's a lot of options in there, a lot of power and a lot of capability, as well as the ability to really test that locally against different Azure capabilities like storage. The cloud service is highly configurable. You can bring your own JDK. You can bring your own Java server. You have a greater choice of tiers than you do with websites. And by that, I mean what size compute, you know, how much memory, how many cores, stuff like that. You get better options there with cloud services than you do with websites today. And then also there's the Azure Emulator integration. Websites currently is in, the Java support for websites is currently in preview. That being said, it's quicker to deploy, and you've got more options. You can plug into FTP, you can plug into FTP. You can plug into Git. You can plug into Kudu. You can get started from the App Gallery, or you can just flip your site over to Java. So if you just want to start deploying a war, all you have to do is go to that config page and say, "I want to use Java," and the server's ready to go for you. And then you also, you know, you really can just use your own IDE. You don't need to be kind of pulled into using Eclipse if that's not what you're using, because since there's no tooling, there's no kind of suggested route to go.
Yeah. So I always say, when you know, if you're choosing between the two, if you're doing a lot of iterative development, you've got a team, I generally go with cloud services. If you've already sort of towards the end of your life cycle for development and you just want to deploy something and try it on Azure, then websites is a good, quick way to go. Obviously, the Eclipse plugin takes a lot more work to set up. Websites, you can just take something really quick and deploy it. And you also, aside from the Git and Bitbucket and all these different options you have for deployment, you have basic old FTP as well. So you can, on the websites, you can just FTP out stuff. And one of the handy ones, does anyone here use Web Matrix? A couple people. Okay, so one and a half. Yeah. So Web Matrix is actually a pretty cool tool. If you just search Web Matrix, when the website that Chris showed you, the Tomcat website, you can actually download the publish settings, fire up Web Matrix. This is a free tool, and get into that website using those deployment credentials, the publish settings, and start manipulating files in there without having to go through FTP or anything. It's a pretty easy to use interface. If you're familiar with Visual Studio, it's similar in terms of the UI that you have to work with. And it's just a quick and easy way to start manipulating and playing around with files. It has a built-in text editor, so you can change the web config and things like that. So it's a handy thing to do. Just search on Web Matrix. It's free. It's free download, and it's really easy to use. Working with websites.
And there are a lot of other capabilities of cloud services and websites that aren't really specific to Java, but you know, really quite powerful capabilities that you get just from using cloud services to host your Java or from using websites to host your Java. So a lot of the cool stuff you might want to look into when it comes to those aspects of Microsoft Azure. So the last area of kind of Java support we're going to talk about is SaaS, or software as a service. And the idea here is that whether or not you're hosting on Azure, or whether or not you're in VMs or websites or cloud services, Microsoft Azure has a bunch of different services that you can take advantage of. And this is the same, you know, it's true whether you're doing something in .NET or Java or PHP or Node. These are services that are out there that are available to you. So Brian's talked about or alluded to some of those, as well as I, so stuff like storage and a few of the other ones. And we're actually going to go through some of those right now. So the first thing I want to mention, and Brian already highlighted it, is there's an SDK for Java, and it, you know, works with Windows, Mac, and Linux. So you download this SDK, and despite, you know, whether you're developing your Java app for a VM or for a web server or for a cloud service, or running your own data center, this SDK gives you access into Microsoft Azure features. Most recently, I think they just released the 0.5 release of this, and we don't have a slide to cover, but one of the newest features is there's integrated support for the Microsoft Azure Management Libraries, which is a really cool feature in that it allows you to actually control, you know, kind of administer your Azure subscription. So using this Java SDK, you can now create new websites or create new VMs, scale up and down your VMs. So if you wanted to create some really sophisticated administration panel for how you're using Azure and Java, you can do that using the Java SDK now. So the next thing we're going to do is kind of through some of the building blocks or some of the services you can use using the SDK.
So as I mentioned, you know, we have this cache capability built into Azure Pass, and it's very handy because you can use it distributed across nodes. And it's available. We have the SDK, which manages access to that, and there's code snippets on how to access that through your applications.
How many people in here are using Active Directory at their company? All right, I think I may have saw one hand not go up.
It's all right. Tech ed. So
that's about right. It's 93% of the room. So you can integrate with Active Directory and Enterprise Identity. This enables single sign-on within your apps, as well as access to the Graph API. What's really cool, though, is that a while back we announced Azure Active Directory, which is a way of integrating or, you know, merging your Active Directory on-premise with Active Directory in the cloud. This gives you access to a ton of features, like you can build, for example, Android or iOS apps, which will then connect to your Azure Active Directory, which connects to your on-premise Active Directory. So you can secure apps that are just, you know, out and available in, you know, the App Store, stuff like that. Really cool capabilities, and obviously you can plug into this from your Java apps as well.
Service bus, yeah. So you can also topics and queues in Service Bus. There's accessibility through those as well, through the API. Once again, code snippets and things. It's just a handy way of being able to loosely couple building your applications. If you want to do, you know, mobile notifications and things like that, you can queue them up here, and it's just easily scale messaging in your applications.
One of the other features of Service Bus, because Service Bus kind of encompasses a few different things, is Service Bus relays. And Service Bus relays are a really cool way of basically connecting something on-premise to Microsoft Azure, so that then when you make a request to the Microsoft Azure, it basically gets funneled to your, you know, to your own data center, for example.
You got a question?
So as far as the question was, what's the backend protocol for that, and isn't it only compatible with Microsoft technologies? There are some issues there. Like, I think the recommended approach is you're running a WCF service in your data center. But I've seen it done through other methods, so it would probably take some work, but you could, you know, do something. Or to be honest, you could have a WCF, you know, service running in your data center that connects to your Java resources. So you might have to have a shim there, but yeah. However, one of the new features that was just announced, I think yesterday, was hybrid connections.
Yeah.
A new feature of Azure BizTalk services, which basically allows you to much more easily connect your on-premise to your Azure stuff.
There was a question.
So,
Service Bus, SQL.
So SQL database. So I think probably most everyone knows what SQL database is. Microsoft Azure has full support for SQL database. So it's, you know, it's a full SQL database. It's not like it's some weird abstraction or anything like that. So it's, you know, a relational SQL in the cloud. You have a cluster for high availability. We just increased the max size, I think, to half a terabyte at build. It's a fully managed service. You can connect to it from SQL Management Studio. There's a Silverlight utility for doing management as well. And there's also SQL reporting support. So you can connect to this from Java if you want. There's also support for MySQL through ClearDB. So if you want to connect to a MySQL server running in Azure, you can do that as well.
So blob storage as well. We have, you know, it's basically, it's what they call Azure storage now. It's a file system access storage for storing. You can store pictures, files, streaming media, pretty much anything you put on, you know, Dropbox or any kind of virtual system that you have that you can use for accessing files in the cloud. That's what we have through blob storage. Some of the concepts, how many people use blob storage here already? Okay, just a couple. So just to give you the basic concepts of blob storage, so you have an account, container, blob, and blocks and pages. Here, I'll take that, thanks. So this is what a URL, you access everything through the REST API, actually just access it through the URL. You've got an account name, which is what you specify, and then blob, core, Windows, net. You've got a container name, which you specify, and a blob name. Blobs are items, pictures, streaming files, things like that. You've got page blobs and block blobs. Page blobs are best for read-only, and then block blobs are good for read-write. It's just a different sort of optimization they have for these. So you've got your account, and then you point to a container using the same URL. And of course, in this case, you can use Java as well. And then you've got your blob name, which is the actual file, pic01, pic02, or a video.avi. This is just a little code sample to show you what's in the SDK. You import these two packages. Then you connect to a container. You open the container. In this case, you set up a storage connection string. You point to the storage account and your storage account key, which is provided to you when you create a new storage account in Azure. And then you look for your container. You look in the container itself. And this code is basically going to open a container, or it's going to create one if it doesn't exist. And then we're going to list all the URIs for a container. So we're going to basically list all the items in the container, and it's going to return a URI for each one of the items. So for it's just a basic Java for inside that container, you use the list blobs class to print out the URI for each one of the blob items in there. So each one of those pictures and things, image 01, 2, and move1.avi would be listed for you.
Great. So. Another feature of Microsoft Azure is something called Notification Hub. So if you're building mobile apps, your company's building mobile apps, push notifications are really important to get information to your to the mobile devices. One of the really great things about Notification Hubs is it really allows you to do hugely scalable push notifications. So if you have tons of devices accessing your application and you need to deal with millions of push notifications, it's really capable of doing that. And the way this works is from the client, you basically talk to whatever the push provider is and get a piece of information that identifies your app and your device. And this works on Windows, there's native implementation of this for Windows Store, Windows Phone, iOS, and Android, as well as Android through GCM, as well as Amazon devices. That token you can then send to your Notification Hub, and then you can ask your Notification Hub to send a push down to the device. Now, there are server SDKs for a number of different platforms, but there's an unofficial or a beta SDK for Java right now. So if you have your Java backend and you want to trigger a push notification down to a device, you can do that with Notification Hubs. It's pretty cool. So I think the last one in here is Traffic Manager. So Traffic Manager allows you to load balance across Azure services. So let's say you've got VMs that you're running in different data centers, and they're all running your Java service, and you want to load balance so that if you're in the US, you get the VMs that are in the US, and if you're in Europe, you get the VMs that are in Europe. You can use Traffic Manager to basically say, hey, send this person to whatever is the lowest latency service. And it also has built-in support. So let's say your stuff in Europe goes down. Well, it'll notice that, and it'll start redirecting everybody that was formerly going to the Europe data center over to the US. So it's going to take care of that redundancy for you. And this works across VMs, websites, and cloud services. What's really awesome about this, though, is I think just yesterday they announced that it also works with on-premise resources. So let's say you've got your Oracle, Java running in your data center, and you want to have a backup in Microsoft Azure or vice versa. You can do that now with Traffic Manager, where you can direct some traffic to one and some traffic to the other, or all your traffic to one and use the other as a backup. Those options are open to you. So here's a bunch of links to kind of the resources, some of which we mentioned today. So there's the VM Depot stuff that Brian and I talked about, the Java SDK, the Developer Center with all the documentation about using the Java SDK. Brian mentioned the Eclipse plugin, so there's the GitHub actual source for it. So if you want to see how it actually works, yeah. or make changes to it, you can do it there. Down at the bottom, there's actually a tutorial for doing Java stuff, so it's really quite useful.
Actually, if you got a second, we have a little bit of time, so
yeah,
unless you had something I'll show
them. No, go for it.
Yeah, so this is the actual GitHub JDK. So you go to GitHub/Azure/, if you just actually just search for Azure SDK Java, and you'll find it. It's the easiest way to find it. And breaking news, as we mentioned, this is new down here, service management. So service management allows you to create sites, including websites. There's all kinds of new features and functionality in here using the MAML, the Microsoft Azure Management Library, I believe it is, to manage your code. So it's a pretty easy way to create, inside Java, create a new website, create a few other things, sort of automating things. So how many people here use Chef or Puppet for developing and delivering things? Okay, just a few. So if you're not using Chef or Puppet and you don't have that whole infrastructure in place and you know Java and you want to create a website, you can actually use the SDK now to do that kind of thing. Or maintain a website, change settings, configurations, things like that. And then you can save that Java code and reuse it. So that's the idea there.
Since, as you pointed out, we do have some time. One other thing I wanted to show is you've probably seen this, which is the new Azure Preview Portal. So right now, websites are supported inside the Preview Portal. So all this stuff I showed you earlier today with kind of going in and looking at your websites and setting up Java for your website, stuff like that, that's all in this new Preview Portal. So if you want this really awesome-looking interface for handling your Java websites, you can do that in here.
Yep. And actually, I'll show them again.
Yep.
Did you have something else you want to show?
No,
okay, cool. So the other thing I wanted to show you was, let's see. I mentioned Web Matrix. Also, how many people are using Jenkins or Hudson for continuous integration? Okay, cool. One of the things you can use with Windows Azure you might not know about, we have a Windows Azure Storage plugin for Jenkins and one for Hudson as well. And those are on the GitHub site. If you just search once again for Jenkins Azure, you're going to find this. And what it allows you to do is when you're publishing artifacts, you can automatically publish them to a Azure blob. We have a way to do that. And then obviously, once they're in the Azure blob, people can access them as if it was on the file system. Similar functionality to what we have for the Eclipse plugin. I won't show you a full demo, but when you fire up Jenkins, you have options for deployment options. And including files, et cetera, in there. And the idea here is once you publish it up to Azure, you can have a different artifact storage facility for each one of your packages. So you might have dev, test, production, and you can create three different CI work streams using Jenkins or Hudson that will actually publish up to Windows Azure blobs. And then what you can have, what I've seen people do is actually create a facility that watches for new items in the Azure blob and downloads them automatically to the right server and starts running tests on them after Jenkins has got done with their part. So it's just kind of a cool way to use Azure as part of your work stream when you're working with Jenkins or Hudson. I mentioned Web Matrix as well. Should I show them Web Matrix? I'm thinking.
How many are you doing Windows-based Java development? Nope, don't show
not
them.
Many? Okay, never mind.
Web Matrix is a cool tool, but it is a Windows tool. So
yeah, Windows only.
If it's so. Going to be irrelevant to some of you. So some references to some of the Oracle stuff. If you go to windowsazure.com or now microsoft.azure.com/oracle, you'll kind of get the landing page where you get links to a bunch of stuff, including case studies on using it. As we mentioned, and I think we'll show the time in just a second, there is a session Brian's doing on Thursday specific to Oracle support on Azure, as well as there's an Oracle booth downstairs. So if you want to hear it from the horse's mouth, you can do that.
Yeah, so one of the cool things about that is Alex Kay from Oracle is going to be co-presenting with me, and he's got some .NET applications that access Oracle backends. If you're working with that at all, something to be of interest. He's going to be showing that, and I'll be showing Oracle in general as well.
Great. So some takeaways: if you're not using Azure yet, you can sign up for a free trial at azure.com. If you have an MSDN subscription, you get free Azure benefits. Just go to msdn.com and log in and go to benefits, and it's there. So check out VMs and the Azure support with both Oracle, Linux, Java, WebLogic database, as well as on Windows Server. Check out the support for Java on websites. Check out the SDKs and some of the different features of Azure you can use with it. So Brian and my contact information is there. You can always reach out to us if you have questions about Java on Azure or just Azure in general. Let's see. So some related content. So there's Brian's session Thursday at 8:30 a.m. So if you feel like waking up very early on Thursday, like you did today, thank you, you can go ahead and check that out. And then there's a link to the build session, What's New with Windows Azure Webs, or yeah, with Azure Websites. That was actually when the Java on Websites was announced, so there's a little bit more depth in there and more detail on some of that stuff.
Yeah, by the way, it's early for us because we're on West Coast time. So
so visit the developer platform and tools booth. Looks like you can win some cool prizes and do some other fun stuff there. So check that out. That's downstairs in the expo hall. Some more resources, visualstudio.com, engineering stories, a bunch of stuff for Visual Studio. Complete an evaluation, and you can win Xbox One. So please do complete an evaluation and let us know how we did, and hopefully we can get more Java content in the future.
I know not everyone fills out the evaluations, but if you want to see more Java and Oracle content, please do, because this is sort of a trial, I think, for TechEd and for all the developer conferences that Microsoft does. And they're trying to see what kind of response and what kind of attendance and things we get for Java Oracle sessions. So if you'd like to see more of this kind of content, more details in the future, please do fill that in. And please let us know what you'd like to see that we might have been missing in this session and in future sessions.
Absolutely. And there's the QR code. I think you can scan that to evaluate the session. I believe there are also computers outside that you can just go up to and evaluate sessions if you want to, or use them to Skype, I think, stuff like that. I think that's it for our side of things. So there's microphones. We'd love to answer any questions you guys might have.
We've got about 10, 15 minutes. 13 minutes, actually. So. Wow, he did an awesome job.
I guess so. I guess we answered every possible question. Oh, wait, I think we may have a winner.
There we go.
when are we going to get Zulu for Java 1.8?
Oh, Java 8? I think it's there now. Let me check.
Maybe right now.
Yeah, there you go.
It hasn't been there for the last couple of weeks.
No, not yet. It's going to be very soon, though. I would expect that within the next 30 days or so. Yeah.
Okay. The service bus access in the Java SDK, is that AMQP now?
Service bus access
REST-based
in the Java
access?
SDK. That one I'd have to look up. I'm not sure that AMQP is supported. It is. Oh, okay.
Really
there
is.
We go.
It's,
thank
it's
you.
It's supported by the service bus. The question is, does the SDK use it as opposed to using the REST interfaces, which kind of notoriously time out and have problems connecting and things like that?
Exactly. I was just going to check that.
Sounds like it is.
It is?
Okay. Yes.
Cool.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Great.
I'm glad we had a community answer here.
Yeah. All right, well, cool. Thank you guys all so much for coming. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Fill out your evaluations. Have a great time at the rest of TechEd. I hope you enjoy. And thank you all for coming again.
And hopefully see some of you guys on Thursday. Thanks.